Hello and welcome to Jawlaw. I'm your host, Joe McGregor. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about accounts receivable. Just a reminder for all you who listen, it certainly helps a ton to have you rate and review the show. Helps people find us. Always appreciated. But yeah, accounts receivable. This is a subject that's going to apply to people who are purchasing a practice. It does apply to people who are selling, but that's not the angle we're taking today. First of all, we need to describe exactly what is an account that is receivable. And in today, we're going to specifically exclude orthodontics because it's a little bit different there and probably too deep of a conversation for today's podcast, perhaps something that we'll cover in the future. But an account receivable for our purposes today, and like everything, there are always exceptions to this rule, but for the most part, it is money that is owed for work that you have already done. This applies primarily, and I stress primarily because technically it's more than this, but primarily for work that is completed. So for our purposes, it's not going to count accounts receivable in orthodontics, whether it's contracts receivable or accounts receivable, and it's not going to really talk about works in progress. And just really quickly, works in progress is maybe a long case where you have an expectation that somebody's going to pay throughout the case. And sometimes that payment is going to be in advance of work being done, and sometimes it's being paid after work is being done. So we're not talking about that. That's a thing. We know it's a thing, but we're specifically excluding that because what happens is people ask us, should I buy the AR for practice? And in order to answer that question, we need to talk about what it is that they think they're buying. And what they think they're buying is money that is due for work that's already been completed. Now, let me further delineate that when someone does work, there are a number of different payment methods that are coming in. What we're not talking about is you do work and the patient goes to the front counter and essentially pays at time of service, even though it is after the work's been done. It's not an account receivable if they're paying that same day. Now, technically, it is an account receivable if it's being submitted to insurance and or like a government payer, like Medicaid or someone like that. However, this is where we start talking about it. This is where it gets serious because there is a significant difference between a government payer or an insurance payer who is almost positively going to pay. Yeah, there are a potential of adjustments or other deductions or whatever. But for the most part, assuming it has been properly billed and has been properly performed, you are going to get paid. So the collection rate on third-party payers is different than the other category, which is a cash payer, a private payer, who is going to come in, receive work, and at some point in time, you're like, hey, I know this family. I know they're gonna make payments on this. I know they're good for it, and they are going to pay me back. So when a purchaser comes to us and says, hey, should we buy the AR? Well, our first answer is, hey, you need to talk to your CPA and or consultant, because that's really a business question that requires looking at the aging report. How much in terms of a percentage are they collecting from those payers? We would expect that when it's third-party payers, the percentage is going to be very high, and it's going to be relatively quick. So not these long, drawn-out payments, but within the first 30 or 60 days. Obviously, this varies from payer to payer. In the case of Medicaid, it may vary state to state. But in private payers, it helps to know, hey, are most of the patients taking 4 months to pay or 6 months to pay or a year to pay? Or is this something where you send them a bill and 2 weeks later, everybody's paying? It also helps to know what percentage of the payment is being billed out. So is this something where a patient is required to pay 50% upfront and then they're allowed to make the other payment on the back end or whatever? You need to understand how these accounts receivable arise. And honestly, most of that's not really a legal consideration. However, there are a couple of things that we do answer. First of all, probably the most basic question that we get is people ask us, hey, is accounts receivable typically included in the purchase price? Well, most of these acquisitions are asset purchases, which means you are buying a collection of assets. So you're buying the dental chairs, you're buying perhaps the tenant improvement allowance, the computers, the employee manuals, whatever. You're buying a collection of assets. And accounts receivable is an asset that you can or cannot buy. It is customary that the accounts receivable is not assumed to be part of that collection of assets. It can be included, but it's not customarily included. Usually, it's something that you have to specifically ask for. Hey, I would like the accounts receivable. However, it is typically purchased. It's added on to the purchase price. But when people ask, well, should I add that on to the purchase price? I would say that our default, again, after the caveat of don't just listen to us, but the default that we say is when in doubt, leave it out. Because the problem is a problem of information. Let's say that we have a seller who is a fee-for-service practice, and they have a great relationship with their patient base. Well, it's not unreasonable to think that if we were to lay out their aging report and have the names of all the people who owe that seller money, they could probably look down that list and have a good idea who's going to pay, who's not going to pay, you know, which of these accounts are going to be total write-offs, who just needs to get the next check cashed before they can finish their payment. And they probably even know when this money's coming in and when it's not. And that's something a buyer cannot do. As much as you know about the practice and as much homework as you're going to do and as smart as your advisors are, you will never have that same amount of information. So when you come to the table and you're saying, hey, I'd really like this accounts receivable, because the reason people buy the accounts receivable is you're expecting that cash flow. You're saying, hey, I want to purchase this. So that cash flow comes in and I have money to work with to operate the business. Well, let's just say that our example accounts receivable balance is $50,000 and you offer $30,000 for it. Usually, that's not exactly how it happens. What happens is you offer a percentage based on the days that it takes to collect. So maybe you're offering 100% of anything that's in 0 to 30 and 90% of anything that's going to be collected, 31 to 60 and so forth and so forth. But altogether weighted, that is $30,000. And you say, hey, therefore, I will give you $30,000 for your $50,000 of accounts receivable. Well, a seller can lay out that aging report and say, you know what, I'm going to get $40,000 from these people. So your $30,000 offer doesn't make sense to me. However, let's say that you've offered $30,000, they lay it out, and they say, hey, I'm only going to get $29,000. I'd rather have $30,000 now than $29,000 ever. So yes, this is a good deal. You just lost $1,000 on day one of your practice. What's even worse, what if you offered $40,000 and it was only worth $30,000? Or however you do the math, it's easier for them to know whether or not it's a good deal than it is for you to know. So therefore, we say, when in doubt, leave it out. It's just hard to know. There are times when it seems pretty obvious that it's a good deal. And we're not saying that you can't get a good deal. You can. We've had clients who have definitely gotten good deals. But most of the times when we hear feedback, it's actually people lamenting that they purchased the AR. We think that it's typically safer to get your operating capital just from the bank. And that doesn't come without its costs either. But it is a more expected structure of utilization of this money. It's just a harder thing, whether or not to buy these accounts that you just never know. I mean, there's no promise that any of them are going to pay. And certainly, you want to think thoroughly about this option. What's the mix between cash payers versus third-party payers? Sometimes we'll see parties will exclude third-party payers from it. There's a lot of different ways to carve up accounts receivable. There are a lot of different ways to value accounts receivable. People always ask, what's the standard way to value accounts receivable? And And I guess if we're forced to say that there's a standard, it's this 90, 80, 70, usually after somewhere in between 120 days, 180 days, the realization rate on these accounts just is super low. You're probably not going to see them. But that's not even always the case either, because sometimes we'll see practices who just have a really long collection cycle and get all that money. Also, just one caveat, when people say, hey, my collection rate is 99%, you need to be careful because there are ways to make accounts look like it's 99%, especially if there's some write-offs. So there's a definition issue when you're talking about accounts receivable in the first place. So sometimes 99% means 99% of accounts that I think are collectible. Well, it doesn't take too much effort to realize that almost anybody could say that. If you are serious about purchasing accounts receivable, you need to do your homework, and you should not offer unless you are absolutely confident that either you're getting a great deal or you don't need that money. You have some latitude to guess wrong a little bit. I don't know too many people who are in that spot, but I guess if theoretically that person existed, then fine. But for the most part, the seller is in the stronger position because they know the accounts or they have more familiarity with the accounts, at least if it's a single office. So like I said, when in doubt, leave it out. And if you leave it out, make sure that there is a very, very tight understanding of exactly how that seller is going to collect his or her AR. Because one of the most common ways post-closing conflict arises is the collection of the AR. How long is the collection going to last? How are you going to allow that seller to collect on their bills? What are they going to expect out of you? Or are they going to expect nothing out of you? What if they want to send one of the patients that you just purchased to collections? How much do you want the seller interacting with the patients you just purchased? There are a host of things you need to discuss and you need to think about and plan for in your agreement. But the point here is, whether you purchase accounts receivable or not, what's most important is that you have thought about it. You've thought about it thoroughly. You understand it. Even if you don't purchase AR, you need to understand their collection habits and practices and how that's either going to be adopted by you or how they're going to phase out of their practice ownership through this AR. And if you do that, you will have a much better transition and a much higher chance of success post-closing. And that's all we've got for today. Want to remind you, for our seminar classes, please go to mcgregorfirm.com. Follow the links for our seminar series. We'd love to see you out there. If you have any questions, please email me at joe@jawlawpodcast.com. And again, if you feel so inclined, please feel free to rate and review the show. See you next time. Wouldn't it be nice?